I will call this April 11th meeting of PFAC to order. The first matter of business is the approval of the March 28th, 1913minutes. And I noted in there that Mrs. Hughes had a request that we, the staff provide some information about turnover in our financial advisors as well as our council, which is part of the agenda. Is that correct?
That's correct.
So we complied with our request from our previous minutes. Do we have any other comments or corrections in the minutes? Does anybody have any corrections? None? Well, if that's the case, may I have a motion to approve?
Second.
Move to approve. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
None opposed. Okay. With respect to the request for disclosure about the our bond counsel and financial advisors, Ms. Lester, would you fill us in on what you found out?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Suzanne Lester from CEO Public Finance. At our last meeting where the committee was requested to approve the underwriter slate, a new underwriter slate that we go out to request for qualifications every 2 years, it was mentioned that we renew the financial advisor slate every 3 years, the bond counsel slate every 4 years. There was a discussion about whether or not every 3 and 4 years was soon enough, and there was a question of what turnover rate was for the bond counsel and financial advisors that the county works with. So as part of the agenda package, we provided a schedule of the financial advisors and bond counsels for our all of our bond deals since 2009. I think we went back that far, and you can see the name of the firms and our primary project managers that we worked with for each of those financings. And we think it shows that in the municipal finance professionals that we've hired, there's very low turnover in the team. And I'm available for any questions regarding the schedule.
Well, it appears that ORIC, of course, has done the majority of all the bond council deals since 1909 or 2009, and same people. Are you getting bored with those people, or are they?
I wouldn't say bored. You
wouldn't say bored. All right. And it appears the same with KNN. The same people have been there, and of course the others are scattered deals, which is pretty hard. So it looks like the point that you've indicated here is that there's a consistency of staff in our bond council as well as our financial advisors for the last 3 years, 4 years.
That's correct.
All right. Any comments? Mrs. Hughes, are you satisfied with that?
Oh, I think it was an excellent assignment. I appreciate doing that. It gives us comfort that we have experience. But I will share that since the last meeting, I had lunch with one of the managing partners of one of the major firms who shall remain nameless. You'll see why after the comment. And I asked why they didn't, we didn't see their name. They said they can't compete with ORIC because what they do is they've sort of basically bid them out of business. Mm-hmm. And so I thought from our perspective on this side, that wasn't a bad thing. Mm-hmm. But that explains a lot. He said we could, but they just bid us out. Says it doesn't become profitable.
I've heard the same comment. I do business with a major international law firm,
yeah.
And I brought the same question up to them, and I heard the same remarks.
It's yeah. Probably the same firm. It's an international major firm.
Right. Yeah.
He doesn't want to be attributed to that comment, but.
Right. Right. Okay. Any other comments about this report? Fine. Thank you very much. We appreciate you doing that.
Thank you for doing that
yeah.
for us.
Thank you very much. All right. Next item on the agenda. Another trans deal coming up. This is an approval in concept of the issuance of tax revenue anticipated notes, which we call trans, which we seem to be very familiar with every year. And Ms. Lester, will you fill us in here on what you're asking for?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. And just as an aside, on the prior agenda item, we were requesting a receive and file, so I don't know if you need to make a motion to receive and file the schedule, the report that we gave on that last item.
I'd like to propose a motion that we receive and file. Is that the term you use? Receipt and file?
Yes.
I'll make that motion.
In favor? Aye.
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 None opposed. Okay, proceed, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. At this time, I'd like to call Lewis McClure of Public Finance staff to the podium to give the presentation on trans.
Thanks, Suzanne. As the chair mentioned, item number four is for the approval in concept and the selection of the financing team for the possible 2013-14 trans. As a lot of the committee already knows, the trans are a short-term borrowing for the purposes of cash flow to offset the mismatch between receipts of revenue and payment of expenditures. Just a little bit of history. In the years following the bankruptcy from 95 to 2007, the county was actually able to cover these shortfalls doing internal borrowing from various funds that the county has. However, in 2008, due to increased reliance on property tax revenues, which only come in twice a year, the county was pushed into doing these trans in order to smooth out the revenue stream. So the county did the trans from 2008 to 2011 for the mismatch of revenues. However, in 2012, the county was once again, due to healthy cash flows, be able to avoid the borrowing and just once again borrow from internal funds within the county and save the issuance costs and the interest costs related to trans. However, this coming up fiscal year, there's a lot of uncertainty in our cash flows due to the VLFAA lawsuit with the state, which has to do with how much VLF revenues are kept at the county versus how much go up to the state. And so in order to have as many tools as we can in our toolbox coming up on the next fiscal year, we decided to move forward with an approval in concept and a selection of a team for trans, should we need them, depending on the outcome of the litigation. In terms of the financing team, you'll be surprised to hear that ORIC and KNN are again on the team. We conducted an RFP process, and they actually came out on top for Bond and Disclosure Council for ORIC, and then KNN is the financial advisor. And then I also wanted to mention, I think also at the last meeting, it was suggested that we include, when we do an RFP, we include the panel of the qualified professionals, and we have done that as attachment one and two for financial advisor firms and disclosure council firms, respectively. So if this is approved today, we'll go forward to the board, and then if we do need to issue trans, we will come back to PFAC and the board with full documents and the finalized structure.
Question.
May I start, please? What I'd like to ask is, would you please give us a summary about what this vehicle license fee argument is about or this litigation?
I'd love to ask Frank to maybe.
Mr. Chairman, I'd be happy to. The County of Orange, as well as other counties in the state, receive a certain percentage of the vehicle license fee to use for local purposes. And back in 2004, the state did a swap where they exchanged county's vehicle license fee for property tax money. And that was done on a dollar-for-dollar basis. Orange County was in an unusual position because, related to our bankruptcy, we had intercepted a portion of our overall vehicle license fee allocation, approximately $50 million, and that was being intercepted at the state and transferred to the trustee on our bankruptcy bond deal. So when that swap occurred in 2004, Orange County swapped approximately 76% of its vehicle license fee revenue for property tax. The other 24% represents that $50 million that was pledged for our bankruptcy debt. So we were the only county that received a combination of continuing vehicle license fee revenue and then that property tax for vehicle license fee swap. Combined, that equaled a dollar-for-dollar exchange, the same exchange that all other counties received. Fast forward to 2011, as part of the state's final budget, the state approved kind of a last-minute, middle-of-the-night bill, SB 89. And what SB 89 said was all vehicle license fees allocated to counties, of which there's only one, would be swept by the state and moved into a local revenue fund in order to support the state's obligations under realignment. So that money was swept. So post-swap, Orange County, it was the only county that was receiving then an unequal amount of property tax in exchange for the vehicle license fees that were lost. So based on meetings between our auditor controller and the CEO's office and county council, they did a review of the revenue and taxation codes, reviewed what was the proper interpretation, in our view, of how to calculate that swap. Because as you're aware, the property taxes are collected locally by our treasurer, and the allocation and administration is handled by the auditor controller. So all the revenues were here. They were not at the state. So since we had the fiduciary duty to manage that allocation, there was an understanding in terms of our legal perspective that the county had the right to administer those that transaction in accordance with the original intent of the law, which was that a dollar-for-dollar exchange would be the end result. And that was the intent of the original law, which I believe was SB 1096 in 2004. So our local auditor controller, based on direction from the board and a review from council, is continuing to administer that vehicle license fee swap in a dollar-for-dollar component. And what that means is that we allocate the full dollar-for-dollar amount to the county. And what happens ultimately is that the amount of money that's transferred to the Educational Revenue Augmentation Fund, which funds local schools, is shorted by that $50 million. That's the same methodology that's used by other counties. So that is the standard method. State has disagreed with our interpretation of revenue to taxation code, and they brought that lawsuit into our local courts here.
Well, there's a lot of information there, but let me back up just a second. Aren't vehicle fees collected by the state?
They are.
How does the county get a hold of them?
We have to do a calculation of the amount that was due to all counties back in 2004. That's considered the base year. And the way that Revenue Taxation Code 97.7 reads is that you use the base year amount, and then you make adjustments to that allocation based on the changes in property tax assessed values from year over year. So what we do is we have to calculate what the estimated impacts would have been had we continued to receive vehicle license fees from the state. And then counties then turn around and give themselves a credit against the money that's collected from property tax and distributed to schools.
Okay, so in other words, what we have been doing is collecting the property tax and shorting the state under the theory that they owe us the vehicle fee. Did I say that right?
I guess maybe the attorneys might phrase it differently, but I think that's essentially what is happening.
Yeah, is that essentially what? Yeah, it's an offset. Okay, and all right. So then, tell me, what was the purpose or the logic of this swap for property tax to the vehicle fee?
It was done really as a benefit to the state. I believe at the time the state was selling their economic recovery bonds. And in the financial marketplace, there was not a great deal of confidence in the state's financial condition. So at that time, they needed to pledge a revenue stream to support their bond deal. And I believe, this is coming from memory, so I believe what happened was the state wanted to pledge a secured revenue stream, which really is vehicle license fees. And in order to get that pledge, they needed to do an exchange with local counties in order to make that deal happen.
So, bear with me here. This is complex. Assuming that, as I understand it, for every dollar of property tax that comes in, like the county gets like 6 cents. Is that essentially right?
Yes.
Right? And then, so out of that now, we get, say, 4 cents, but the other is supposed to come in the vehicle fees. Is that it?
Right. I think the effective percent that we get, there's other swaps like this that occur in the administration. It is very complex, but overall we receive approximately 12%, 12 to 13% effectively.
And then what percent of the vehicle fees do we get? I mean, how does that work?
We no longer receive the original portion of the VLF. I do believe the county continues to receive approximately $1 million to $1.5 million, and that's related to my understanding is adjustments or corrections to state allocation from prior years when counties continued to receive vehicle license fees.
Sherry, can you clarify that a little bit? I mean, can you add to that?
No, I think he's explained it very well. It is a very complex issue because the state has been, again, exchanging these revenues and sales tax and the triple flip you might have heard of. And so really, the county is 92% funded in the general fund from property taxes. So that is the primary revenue source. There's a small sales tax percentage. I think it's a 25%, 0.25 part of the sales tax that goes to our public safety, our DA, and our sheriff. But we're really all property tax now, almost.
So what happens if the county loses this litigation?
Currently, we build this revenue into the county budget, and because the money is uncertain or the funding stream is uncertain, we have been using it to repay certain loans and other one-time obligations, and we've also set it aside and used it to support facilities projects, things that don't have an ongoing cost. If we lose that money, it would really impair the county's ability to manage its deferred maintenance projects. It would impair our ability to do future investment in information technology and other construction type projects. We have not used that money during this period of uncertainty to fund salaries or other ongoing costs.
Who would like to speculate on the probabilities of litigation, the outcome?
Or at least what's the procedural? Where are we in the lawsuit?
I can give you an update on that. Recently, our court extended the trial date, and the new date is July 8th. My understanding from counsel is that the court then has 90 days from July 8th to issue a final ruling. We are unclear in terms of what span during that time we expect to receive a decision, but that's the best information we have today.
It's a judge trial.
Yes. It's at our local superior court, and the judge on the case is Judge Moss.
Will, if the state loses, are they likely to appeal?
I couldn't guess on behalf of the state, but I would expect that both parties would have a significant incentive to appeal if the judgment went against
And the total dollars involved here you're talking about?
It's approximately $73.5 million a year. And that number is adjusted based on change in assessed valuation. So we're 2 years in now. So it's approximately $147 million that we're talking about. With next year's budget, we'll increase that up to $210 million approximately.
That's a critical amount, isn't it?
It is significant.
It is.
I only have one good piece of news on the litigation front, and that is because I believe it's because of the economy. Appeals are down, way down. And the appellate court is ruling in just hyper speed. I mean, it's within a year. And we're seeing rulings after oral argument, sometimes within 2 and 3 weeks. I've never seen that. So instead of a long, protracted deal, it will probably be appealed, in my opinion.
Okay.
Either way.
I have another question here. It's a little bit different question. Tell me what has to happen before the county is through with all of these covenants from the as a result of the bankruptcy. And I'm looking at paragraph 2 here in your history section on page 2. What has to happen before we are out of these covenants and restrictions from the bank as a result of the bankruptcy?
I don't really think there's, let's see, can I remember? I don't think we're ever really out of the woods on a lot of those in paragraph 2. It's always, I think ever since then, it'll be the policy not to issue strictly for the purposes of arbitrage. That's what got us in trouble, I think, or a little bit of trouble before the bankruptcy is they were issuing trans simply to reinvest the monies and make positive arbitrage. I don't think any of these that we mention would just go away after like the bankruptcy debts paid off, for instance.
So this paragraph is related only to the arbitrage issue, not about the 85% issue and other things that are mentioned here?
Well, some of it talks about California Government Code section.
So that's statutory.
Yeah,
so,
for instance,
okay,
cannot be issued before the first of the fiscal year, 85% of the estimated time. I think that's all in that code section 53850, which I suppose could change, but I don't think it has any tie to the bankruptcy.
Okay, I thank you. I have one more question. Would somebody, preferably our counsel, I guess, explain to me so I can understand it, number one and number two in that page. I read that three times, and I don't understand it. Can somebody explain that to me?
I think that same thing, that gets back to what I think what they were doing is arbitrarily making it look as if certain funds were restricted when in actuality they weren't, and they were able to boost, because you can't just issue trans without a shortfall, per se. So what they were doing was purposely kind of moving money off the table to look like they had this bigger shortfall, and then the IRS caught on to it, because you're borrowing money at tax-exempt rates, and I think they didn't want you to do that. So if you don't have a shortfall, you can't. And again, we were at that time, I think we were investing for arbitrage gain. So that's part of the agreement, is that we will no longer arbitrarily take money off the table in terms of growing our shortfall so that we could issue more trans.
And Mr. Chairman, if I may add, the difference between legally restricted funds and then funds that are, you know, restricted per a board policy is a difference. And I think that in the past, prior to bankruptcy, funds that were restricted for board policy but not legally restricted were included those amounts, which resulted in a higher shortfall and more capacity to issue debt.
Okay, I think I got it. I have one last question on your summary here on page 3. On the second paragraph, you talk about the negotiated sale process versus the competitive process. And I assume a negotiated sale means that some bank just buys it, the debt. Is that correct? And a competitive would mean that you have a full underwriting with multiple underwriters. I got that right?
I think it's actually, in a negotiated sale, what we do is we sell the deal to an underwriter, and then they, in turn, and resell it to the final investors. With the competitive sale, it's actually more like an auction, and we put the deal out there structured with our financial advisor, and then people are free to, underwriters are free to bid on it, either for their own account, I guess, or also to pass it along.
And according to your paragraph here, you think that we've previously done negotiated sales, and in this case, you're considering a competitive process. Is that correct?
Right. There could be some additional savings.
Which would mean multiple underwriters, perhaps, or not
I believe that could work. Yeah, I think depending how it's structured, multiple underwriters can bid on it. I'm not sure.
Okay.
Yeah.
Or is it only if there's multiple maturities?
What you would expect.
Would you introduce yourself?
Sorry, David Broadsley with Canon. Under competitive bid, you would seek bids from multiple underwriters. Sometimes underwriters will group into syndicates and submit bids as a syndicate. Sometimes we'll do it standalone bidding. So, but you would get bids from anywhere 5 to 8 different firms bidding for the paper, and then the firm with the lowest interest rate gets the award.
I see. All right. Okay. Questions.
Sure.
Go ahead, please, Mr. Moore.
You mentioned in 2012 we didn't need to do a TRAN.
Correct.
Does this differ, the new 13 and 14, from what was it, the 10 and 11? Is there any difference between how this is structured and how we structured the last time we did it?
The only structural change we're thinking of making is that competitive versus negotiated. So in the past, we've always done the negotiated sale where we hire an underwriter up front and they help with the deal. In this case, we're thinking of going competitive, so the structure would be a little bit different.
But the reserves and everything else are the same?
I think everything else would be materially the same.
Okay, Ms. Hughes? Mrs. Hughes?
What about as I understood you, we've done this before, and we have not needed to issue the trans, right?
Right. So just this last fiscal year, we came to the PFAC and the board with the approval and concept and the team, but as we analyzed the cash flows, towards the end of the year, we realized we were not going to need one. Instead, we would rely on the internal borrowing.
What is, if any, other than staff time, nominal dollar cost to setting this up? I mean,
you got it right on the head. Just staff time and the professionals work contingent. So if we don't do a deal, they don't get paid, and they understand that.
Can't get better than that.
Yeah.
Okay. Sorry,
Mr. Kroner, comment.
No, I think that's satisfactory.
Reed Rich, you have something?
I have nothing. You answered all my questions. Thank you.
Rodiker?
Actually, you just answered my question as well. I was curious about the costs. You're saying that the costs that we're looking at are predominantly staff time and it's contingency based?
Right, and I think the fact that we did not have to issue trans last year really opened our eyes to the fact that we would more internally monitor the progress and try to minimize any staff time or any consultant time at all as, you know, as a courtesy to them, not to make them spin their wheels and then not pay them. We try to be fair. So yeah, we're going to try to do a lot more internal work to make sure we actually need to do it.
I have a question.
Yes, please.
Can we ask Madam Treasurer how our collections are coming? Through the chair, may I inquire?
Certainly, if that would be
sure.
Okay. I actually just brought the information here. We are doing very well at the moment. Last year, we did have an increase in our assessed value, so that does mean the tax bills going out are going to be higher this year. I believe we were higher by $122 million, if I recall. And at this point, we are about 0.75% up from our collections at the same time last year. This would have been through yesterday. And that relates to about $152 million more than at the time last time. So even with the increase in the assessed value or the tax bills, we are still exceeding that. And for example, our secured taxes, which is the first installment that was paid in December, last year at this time, we were only at 98.31%, and we're at 98.67%. So we have $70 million more in first installment payments, and on second installment payments, we are over 1% greater. And the second installment, of course, the last payment day was just yesterday. We're $81 million more. So quite a few more tax bills have been paid. So we certainly think that the economy is improving. There is a couple of factors. One is more people are paying through their mortgage company, so we are seeing more electronic payments coming in from the mortgage companies. But there certainly are still a lot of individuals that don't have mortgages that are certainly paying more timely. We just had our tax auction a few weeks ago, and we auctioned off 7 properties, which again is still very, very low compared to other counties. So, you know, we think the collections, that should help us when we look at our teeter policy. Of course, it means if the more we collect in, the less we have to pay out to those cities who are teeter cities. If there's any other questions, I'd be available to take them.
Do you have tracking delinquency? Well, you're not delinquent yet. Yesterday, weren't you?
Right, well, we are. The delinquencies is the offset. So right now, for the first installment, we would have a little less than a little over 1.3% that would be delinquent on the first installment. On the second installment, we would have just about 10%, but we do take postmarks, so we will continue for the next week to take in payments that were postmarked timely, and so we really can't identify probably till the end of the month what that actual delinquency where we will start charging that fee on, because many of those payments come in, and we actually image each of those envelopes. We had a taxpayer come in yesterday, and he said, I know I dropped it at the post office. I was there, and my staff was able to actually electronically pull it up while he was there at the counter, and it shows that the post office stamped it on the 12th, not the 10th. So I would recommend to anyone, don't rely on the post office unless you get it hand stamped, and either use our online website, or if you're very concerned and you haven't paid, perhaps bring it in.
Did you give the guy a break or make him pay?
Unfortunately, we have no opportunity under the law. There's very few exemptions to waive penalty cancellations, and we have to keep our consistent policy. We have been sued several times. Ms. Daftery is our county counsel who is assigned to our department, and because we have a consistent policy of how we track it, we have won in every case that I know of in the last 2 years that have come up, because we make sure we follow that state law and we have a consistent policy.
Did you get our check?
We did, and we deposited it. It went out of the bank yesterday.
Okay. Well, I wanted
to. You probably lost a vote there, though. All right. Well, any other comments on this? We have what we've been asked to do here is to, I guess we've discussed this in concept, and we're asking, Ms. Lester's asking for an approval in concept and the selection of bond counsel and financial advisor on this.
That's correct.
Right. Any more comments on this before we have a motion? If not, I'll ask for a motion to approve this.
So moved.
So moved, Mrs. Hughes. And all in favor?
We need a second.
A second, please.
I'll second.
Mr. Roddicker, and all in favor?
Aye.
Nobody opposed. Okay. Now we have, I've been looking forward to this one, the development agency issue.
Oh, yeah, that's a fun one.
Ms. Lester, please.
Oh, boy, this is a fun one. Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. Suzanne Lester, CEO, Public Finance. Public Finance is requesting that PFAC approve in concept a refunding of the outstanding Orange County Development Agency tax allocation bond, Santa Ana Heights Series 2003, and approve the selection of the financing team, which includes K&M Public Finance as financial advisor, Stradling, Yucca, Carlson, and Routh as bond counsel, and EJ De La Rosa and Company as underwriter. A little bit of background, OCDA, the Orange County Development Agency, Redevelopment Agency, issued $38.5 million in Santa Ana Heights refunding bonds in 2003 to refund and defease the 1993 bonds. The current bonds outstanding are payable through September 2023 and are secured by a pledge of property tax revenue attributable to the Santa Ana Heights project area. The current principal balance outstanding is $24,875,000. Bonds maturing on or after September 1, 2014 are subject to optional redemption beginning this September 1, 2013. A little bit of background on the new redevelopment dissolution law. On December 29th, 2011, the California Supreme Court upheld the constitutionality of ABX 126, eliminating redevelopment agencies in the state of California, effective February 2012. On January 24, 2012, the county elected to become the successor agency to the RDA in accordance with the Dissolution Act. It is the successor agency's role to wind down the affairs of the agency, complete legal obligations at the time of the dissolution, and liquidate assets. Pursuant to the law, an oversight board was appointed to oversee the dissolution process. The state law also requires successor agencies to prepare a recognized obligation payment schedule, better known as a ROPS, that identifies the known financial obligations in six-month increment periods. So what that means is each 6 months, a ROPS is prepared by the successor agency and submitted to the Board of Supervisors, then the successor agency oversight board for consideration and approval. The ROPS is then forwarded to the State Department of Finance and State Controller's Office for approval. This is where the fund begins. There have been several project expenditures statewide for various successor agencies that have been rejected by the Department of Finance. However, debt service expenses have appeared for the County of Orange successor agency on each ROPS to date and has been ratified as what's known as an enforceable obligation without any question by all approving bodies. So in each one of these ROPS cycles, there's been kind of a back and forth between successor agency staff, state controller, and Department of Finance staff, and then a determination of a valid, recognized, enforceable obligation by the Department of Finance. In each one of the ROPS, and I think there's been three or four prepared so far, the debt service obligations have never been questioned. In fact, everything I've read so far in the law, it's been specifically stated that the intent is not to harm debt service obligations. The original ABX 26 legislation eliminated bond defeasance as an option because acceleration of payment is specifically prohibited. AB 1484, enacted on June 29, 2012, considered cleanup legislation allows for refundings under certain conditions, including refunded debt may not exceed the principal and interest of debt to be refunded. The point is to achieve savings. Two, existing indebtedness may not be accelerated, and it must be fixed rate financing. Over the last few months, the successor agency, the OCDA successor agency, has discussed the potential for refinancing its debt. Public Finance has participated in providing preliminary estimates of potential savings. At its meeting on December 13, 2012, the successor agency directed county staff to proceed with the refunding of the tax allocation bond Santa Ana Heights Series 2003. The preliminary estimates provided to the Oversight Board indicates approximately $2.5 million savings, total savings, average annual savings of around $240,000, net present value of approximately $1.8 million or around 7%. The estimated credit rating would be triple B, which is comparable to current land secured financings, which also are dependent upon property tax revenue. The current Santa Ana Heights debt is not rated. In recommending the finance team, an RFP was distributed to bond counsel firms and financial advisor firms on the county's current qualified panel. The review team for bond counsel included a county council deputy, public finance manager, and auditor controller manager. The evaluation team recommends Stradlin, Yaka, Carlson, and Routh as the bond counsel for the proposed TAB, which is tax allocation bond, refunding. Stradlin is very familiar with county financings and was the bond counsel on the 2003 Santa Ana Heights deal. Stradlin also has the distinct advantage of having served as bond counsel on the only two tax allocation bond refundings completed in the state for successor agencies under ABX 126. The review teams for financial advisor consisted of two public finance managers and one administrative manager from the successor agency. The team recommends K&N Public Finance to serve as the financial advisor on the proposed refunding. K&N also is very familiar with county finances and has considerable TAB experience. And K&N is currently the financial advisor to the LA County Treasurer in developing a pooled refunding program that will facilitate TAB refundings across LA County. Public Finance recommends EJ De La Rosa and Company to provide underwriter services for proposed TAB refunding. De La Rosa has proactively demonstrated its commitment to Orange County and knowledge of Santa Ana Heights through providing periodic unsolicited analysis of refunding, viability, and estimated savings. Since August of 2012, De La Rosa has provided regular TAB refunding market updates and has kept Public Finance informed of the progress of TAB refundings across the state. Recently, De La Rosa further established their value when they provided public finance staff with a public copy of an S&P Standard & Poor's rating report for one of the two refundings that have occurred, which is in the city of Monrovia. A subsequent discussion of the various credit strengths and weaknesses that were listed for the successor agency in Monrovia in the report, we had a discussion, and what that led to is Public Finance making a recommendation to the successor agency on a reporting change in our ROPS that will likely improve the Santa Ana Heights TAB refunding strengths. De La Rosa provided a statement of qualifications and an underwriter compensation survey comparing similar type financings. De La Rosa is very familiar with county finances, having underwritten the fiscal year 08-09 and the fiscal year 11-12 trans. De La Rosa also has TAB financing experience. I am also informed that De La Rosa was selected as underwriter for City of Oakland TAB refunding and as senior manager for LA County pooled TAB refunding.
After reviewing the survey, Public Finance negotiated a total fee of $10 per thousand of bonds, approximately $250,000 for a $25 million financing. The fee had been previously independently validated in just a ballpark estimate provided by K&N early on. De La Rosa is on the county's current qualified panel of underwriters approved by PFAC on March 28, 2013, and by the Board of Supervisors just this week on April 9, 2013. County staff will return to PFAC and the Board of Supervisors requesting approval of specific financing structures and financing documents later in the year. Public finance staff and the financial professionals from our that are proposed are here to answer any questions.
Thank you. Can you first off describe and give us a little history of the Santa Ana Heights project?
The Santa Ana Heights project, the original bonds in 1993, I believe, were predominantly to provide noise abatement and acoustical insulation to the Santa Ana Heights homeowners impacted by the development of John Wayne Airport. And I'm going to look back at our successor agency program person, and he's nodding his head, so that is correct. I know there were some other, you know, projects attached, but that was the predominant purpose and use of the proceeds.
May we address that, please? Who is this?
I'd like to call Jeff Kirkpatrick from the OCDA successor agency.
Good afternoon. My name is Jeff Kirkpatrick, and I'm with OC Community Resources. How can I help you?
The question I have is, first off, tell us what geographical area this is and what was this redevelopment agency for? And okay. Then the next mm-hmm. question, when you get to that, tell us what you've accomplished since 2003. Tell us what you've accomplished in the Santa Ana Heights project.
That was 1993.
1993, excuse me.
Well, originally in 1986, the county decided to create a redevelopment agency mainly to facilitate the expansion of John Wayne Airport. And that's really where the Santa Ana Heights project area came about. Several years later, the county decided to create a second project area that dealt with county unincorporated areas. But the discussion I'm just going to restrict to the Santa Ana Heights. It is some businesses and residential area just south of John Wayne Airport. In 2008, the final sliver of the project area was annexed by the city of Newport Beach. So the entire former Santa Ana project area is actually now part of the city of Newport Beach. There have been a variety of projects that have completed. In addition to the acoustical insulation program, there was a major street realignment along Birch and Mesa, and sort of pulled this major arterial out of the residential area and kind of kept it towards the commercial. There's been the creation of a new fire station, a new business park. There's been a passive park that's been put in place. There's been numerous infrastructure improvements to the water system out there. They weren't meeting the pressure, so put in a brand new fire suppression system complete with fire hydrants and things like that. There's been the Klein Drive improvement, which up until about 3 years ago was the only dirt road left in Orange County in the middle of an incorporated area. It's now paved and complete with gutters and drainage system that does not impact the existing system that was put in several years prior. That's sort of the highlights there.
The question I have pardon me, my nominal knowledge about redevelopment agencies, but as I understand it, the so-called incremental tax increase or the value created by these development agencies is supposed to retire the bonds. Am I correct about that?
Yes, sir.
And how is that working? I mean, who is going to pay back this $38 million?
Well, Ms. Lester has indicated, the debt service under this new law has priority over all other enforceable obligations. That is the first thing that county staff see once the increment is brought in, if you will, is addressed. In fact, the successor agency has two debt service funds that receive all the increment first to address the debt. Then, as additional funds are available per the enforceable obligations approved by the Department of Finance, then we take out the projects, if you will.
Well, how are we doing?
Yeah.
As far how are we going to who's going to retire $38 million? I mean, is there enough incremental tax revenues to retire this money?
If I may add, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, we're doing very well. We're collecting far above what is needed to retire the bonds. I believe the continuing disclosure document we just filed March 31st indicated a debt service coverage that was over 150%.
Well, why don't we retire them?
Why don't we retire them?
Because the new law prohibits acceleration of payment.
Well, are you defeasing this, or what are you doing?
We're going to refinance it, so we're going to receive debt service savings via a lower interest rate.
So help me with this one, too. All I know is what I read in the newspapers, right? So, but as I understand it, did this redevelopment agency have a stash of cash, which Governor Brown was determined to grab from every redevelopment agency in the country? Did you have a stash of cash, so to speak, that has come in on this?
The Santa Ana Heights, yes, would be, I guess, the short answer. There had been a residual amount that was built up that was being reserved for future projects that were being planned. I don't want to speculate on Governor Brown's thoughts, but we do have a residual balance that we anticipate will be directed to be returned to the alternate taxing entities that would have otherwise received the property taxes, which one of the recipients is the county, the community colleges, the schools.
Chairman, what's the magnitude of that money?
Speak up, please.
What's the magnitude of the fund that currently is there?
I believe the residual balance in Santa Ana Heights is around $10 million. There is another project area, Neighborhood Development and Preservation Program project area, better known as NDAP, that we are not recommending for refunding at this time because of inadequate debt service savings, but it has a higher residual balance.
Well, now, didn't the state, this is a question, didn't the state have some scheme whereby they could sweep this money out of the redevelopment agencies, and did that happen here?
There has been an order, and the county complied to pay about $2.5 million at last June or July. The county, or the successor agency, with the assistance of the county's external auditors, VTD, completed what was known as a due diligence review that identified amounts to be returned to the state. I don't believe that order to return to the state has happened yet, but I think we expect it at any time.
Mr. Kim, do you have any information on these numbers?
What I can do is I can give you an update in terms of what it means to the county. I know that just today I reviewed our year-end revenue forecast from the auditor's office, and that does include a specific line item detail on the forecast for the various property tax components. In the current year, I believe that the amount related to the total RDA, it was approximately $15 million of unanticipated one-time distribution of property tax. So what happens is when the treasurer collects all of the RDA, the former RDA money, the tax increment, and instead of this money going to the RDA for RDA purposes, now it's being distributed based on the original AB8 formulas. And as it's being distributed, I can tell you that the county share of unanticipated revenue is approximately $15 million in the current year. So that's our cut of the approximate 6% of the normal property tax money. And that has to do with the distribution both of the residual balance of fund also those portions of the low mod and housing funds that based on state regulation can be distributed, and also based on the normal tax increment that would have otherwise flowed to these RDAs.
So what did the state rake off of this?
The state would typically, and I'm going to use broad numbers because I don't know them off the top of my head exactly, but the real winner in this would be schools, because schools get the largest single share of property tax. It's approximately 50%, somewhere in that range. So if our 6% was about $15 million, you can, in rough orders of magnitude, you can imagine what it means to local schools. And what that does in return is it reduces the state's Prop 98 guarantee for schools. So then the state general fund has a lower obligation to backfill and true up the Prop 98 funding across the state.
So it gets a credit against 98, so the
exactly.
schools come out the same.
Exactly. So this is, even back to our discussion of the VLF swap, it gets very complicated, but imagine there's a school account and there's a lot of credits that go into it and a lot of deductions that happen to it based on the various laws that have been passed. This would be one addition that would go into that pot.
Sherry, what do you know about this?
Thank you, Chair. I was just going to mention that when these refundings happen, the savings that are generated go back now with the dissolution of the redevelopment to those agencies that would normally have gotten the distribution. So the county, as Mr. Kim has mentioned, will get a portion of this along with any other agency that was getting a portion of that original property tax, because redevelopment used to take just the top. There was the base year, and anything above the base year that of an increase in property taxes went into the redevelopment agency, and now that is dissolved. So those original base agencies who are getting property tax will benefit. So that's why refundings are so important, because it does allow those agencies to be able to receive additional property taxes, which can be used for their operating general fund expenses. And as Mr. Kim so aptly mentioned, there's 44% currently, or this last year, that goes to the school districts, and because they are funded by the state, they get the lion's share of benefits from this, but it does benefit the other agencies, which are here in Orange County.
But I just heard it offsets Prop 98.
Oh, of course. They don't get any more money, but it allows the state to reap
the
advantage
money.
Of that, because they have to pay them a certain minimum amount.
Sure, go ahead, please. Mr. Gamble.
Sorry. If I could add to that. So as you recall, the way that the RDA dissolution works is that we get the total amount of property tax, and there's three things that are deducted from it first, which are the statutory pass-throughs, the administrative fee for the auditor's office, and the approved recognized obligation, enforceable obligations, right? So to the extent that the debt service is lower, there'll be more
yes.
net amount of property tax to distribute, thereby benefiting all tax receiving entities.
Okay. Do you rate over the 20 years this has been in business, the Santa Ana Heights Redevelopment District a success?
I would need someone to define success. Myself, obviously, I haven't been with the program for 20 years. I have seen the pictures of the dirt lots and the, you know, they call it non-conforming plots of land and different things. And now you can drive through the former Santa Ana Heights project area and you wouldn't know it was any different than any other part of the city of Newport Beach. So I would say, yeah, we succeeded there. The airport has expanded a number of times since it was first created, and it's been able to do so without, depending on where you live and who you talk to, too much of a negative impact on the residents. So overall, I would say that the Santa Ana Heights project area was a success under the redevelopment program.
Okay, all right, let's start then. Mr. Moore, go ahead.
I have a couple of questions. Go back to the ropes for a minute. You said they had three reports that have been filed.
Actually, we just recently filed our ROPS, or Recognized Obligation Payment Schedule number 4, which the state's currently looking at.
What is the statute of limitation on the state denying that? They've approved it, they've taken it. How long would they have to come back and say, oh, we made a mistake, we don't really approve that?
Well, One of the things the state has the ability to do is say they approve ROPS number 4, which will cover the July 1, 2013 through December 31st, 2013. And say we have obligation number A for $20 listed there, and for whatever reason that project doesn't move through, or that payment of $20 reduces to $8. When the state reviews the next ROPS for the next 6 month period, they can turn around and deny that project.
Concerned about the liability. And the second thing, I guess I would say to ask Frank, is there any way that we can petition the state, say we have $10 million here and they're asking us to refund $38 million. Can we somehow offset this so that there's a net reduction in the interest that the county is paying?
I don't think so, but I might ask Suzanne to try to attempt to answer that.
Well, I might just add that the OCDA, the county successor agency, as well as several others across the state, are in litigation with the state over these ROPS issues.
Have you met Jerry Brown?
And there is just one thing I wanted to add when in this discussion of the ROPS and how in the Department of Finance might approve an item on the ROPS and then in the next 6 month period not approve it. One option we might have in this refunding process that's defined in the law is to seek what's known as a final determination in advance from the Department of Finance, whereas they cannot come back and question.
That was my first question. Get some certainty about this.
Are we going to do that?
We'll discuss the need for that with the finance team. That will definitely be a topic.
Now, these bonds are secured by the incremental tax revenues. Does the county have a liability on these bonds?
They do not.
So it's only the incremental tax money that secures these bonds.
That's
Is that correct? And when you refinance it, it's the same liability, right?
That's correct.
So it's a collateral of a cash stream of incremental. And so what if there's no increase in the tax rate? I mean, does that mean there's not any money to pay these bonds?
No, these bonds are also secured by our TEETER program as well, so that's another security. But again, the amount of property tax that is being collected is well above the debt service need. And I think one added control that we have is we've got the successor agency program folks, but the what's called the Redevelopment Property Tax Trust Fund, where the approved amounts from the Department of Finance are deposited by the auditor controller, is managed in CEO Public Finance. So obviously our priority is making the debt service payment. So that does happen first before any additional deposits are spent on salaries, administration, or projects.
Now Sherry increases my taxes 1% a year, right? So does that 1% part of the incremental
all your fault.
Tax, is that the 1% part of the incremental, or is it?
2%.
It's 2%, excuse me. All right, so is that 2% part of the incremental tax revenue, or is it above the 2% increase every year?
I'm sorry, I guess I didn't understand the question.
Okay, my property taxes, she sends me a bill every year, and my taxes go up 2%. And this redevelopment, this property in a redevelopment district, when those taxes go up 2%, is that 2% considered incremental tax revenue?
Yes.
Okay, so it's from the base rate, is that correct?
The base year.
The base year, excuse me, yeah.
The base year, and anything above that went into the redevelopment or now the successor redevelopment.
Correct. What's the current interest rate on these bonds, and what do you expect to do the new deal at?
The current interest rates, I have a range on the bonds, are from 3.75% to 5.25%. The estimated potential range on a refunding is anywhere from 1.05% on the shortest maturities to 3.54%.
So there are multiple tranches in this deal?
Yes.
I see. And so it must be different maturities?
Correct.
Okay. All right. Redevelopment agencies. Okay. All right. Who wants to add to this? Sherry, go ahead, please.
I just have a couple other questions, not on the successor agency. I wanted to thank staff for, you know, putting in very good detail the attachments for both the prior item and this item. It's very easy to see who bid and what the ratings were. So I do appreciate that, including the fees on it. So I do appreciate your adding that. I did have two questions. One is on the attachment 4, which is the financial advisor. They were very close in rating. You know, when I looked through them, because I do think it is important for us to make sure that we are being objective and we're providing a competitive process for all of those people who are, all of the companies who are on our list. And the item that I saw is that who we selected has one of the highest bids compared to all of the others. And I don't know if there is an opportunity in this type of a proposal for us to go back to see if we could negotiate a slightly lower amount, because of, in this case, if it's quite different, you can see that the firms are, you know, there's expertise that we need to be able to streamline the process. But in this case, there were many that were very, very close. So I would just ask staff if there is an opportunity to go back and even lower that bid process. Obviously, you've selected the firm, and if we approve that, but since they were so close, it would be nice to have a little bit lower fee on that. I think they were the highest at the $55,000. And then in addition, I don't know if staff has any comments on that.
We can look into that. I must say the criteria that I think really put K&N over the top is that they've got current experience post-redevelopment dissolution. That's very hard to come by. There's been very, very few deals in the marketplace. It's very complex. So the evaluation team, thought that was very important to note.
All right, thank you. And then the second question is on the underwriter. I know in this case you or you're proposing a negotiated deal where you've actually selected it versus the prior one where you were looking at a competitive sale on that. And I understand certainly the types of things that they have done. My question is on the pricing, and thank you again for putting in on the page 4 of the AIF. The last three paragraphs talked about kind of the representative pricing, the 10.41, the 10.35. But when you talk about land secured financing, which this is land secured financing, or is this not? This would be land secured financing?
It's not land secured financing, but it's considered comparable in that they both have property tax revenues as the source of a repayment.
Right, and with that one was to, again, when you looked at all of the deals in California that were done this last year, they averaged the 9.76, and I did notice that our fee was higher than that. Again, I think when you look at the specifics, we have a large reserve. Again, there's a lot of benefits that we have with this successor agency that others, like you mentioned, you know, the savings just aren't there. You know, in this case, I do think there are some benefits, so I don't know if that is an opportunity or if you do feel that even though we're paying more than what that average is, the county is still getting a good deal, because that's where you go to the competitive process. Is you then know that you don't have to worry because everyone, you know, starts with square one and they bid on the project. And in this case, we are doing the separate, and that would just be another question for staff.
Committee member Friedenrich, there may be an opportunity to further negotiate. We did feel it was fair given the other comparisons of 10.41 and 10.35, and the fact that this isn't going to be an easy refinancing. The reason why there has only been two in the state, and those two were refundings on debt that had defaulted. So the interaction and the uncertainties of dealing with the state controller and the Department of Finance, I know those haven't been easy interactions thus far with the ROPS approval. And you know, further steps of selling the bonds and the work involved, but I do think there could be an opportunity to whittle that down a bit.
And thank you. And it sounds like what Ms. Hughes mentioned, that if we could get that final determination letter, that would certainly provide certainty to those potential investors for it. That, again, because obviously any of those costs, as Mr. Kim mentioned, all of the costs are, you know, subtracted and the agencies get the remainder. And since the county does have a significant interest in it, along with the other agencies, obviously the more funds that we can bring in is certainly helpful. So I do appreciate your comments on that.
Thank
this
you.
Is a September deal, right? That you cannot redeem before September. Did I read that right?
That's correct. So that would be our target date.
Yeah. How many other redevelopment agencies are there in the county that we're going to experience here?
There are 25 other agencies in the county, and my understanding is, and this is from memory, at a certain point, and I don't know why 2016 sticks out in my mind, but it may be another date where all these successor agencies are going to collapse into one.
Would be the county? The same successor agency?
It looks like Jeff would like to answer that question.
Sorry, the way the law exists today, is in 2016, each successor successor agency has its own oversight board. In 2016, the 24 or 25 oversight boards will become one, one to govern over everybody. So we'll still, as the law is written today, still have 24 separate agencies out there, but they'll be beholden to one oversight board. What the makeup of that oversight board is, what the process for that oversight board remains to be seen. The law is very vague right now, but again, it's as the law is written today, and as we've seen in the past, these things change rather quickly.
But how many of these agencies fall under the purview of the county? Don't some of the cities do their own financings and so on?
They do, but my understanding how LA County is approaching it, and one of our financial professionals from K&N or De La Rosa that's currently working on this might be able to expand further on the pooled concept and how LA County is able to manage or facilitate that process.
Sure. And I was also, while he's coming up, I was going to indicate that the county has members on every oversight board. So whatever city it is, the county is the one agency that is, I believe, on every successor agency board.
That's correct.
Raul Lemesqua with De La Rosa & Company. Good afternoon. So LA County decided to take a very proactive stance with respect to refunding these bonds. It is obviously to the benefit of all the participating agencies, the county, the cities, the school districts, community college, and special districts to refinance the debt. Money that otherwise would go to bondholders to pay them 5% will be saved, because now you're only going to pay them 3.5%. So those savings will be reallocated to all the participating agencies. The problem that we have, as Suzanne explained very succinctly, there is so much brain cells that have to be expended to do these deals, because we are breaking new territory. It's a new loss that we have to deal with. And a lot of successor agencies don't want to do it. They're basically saying, we're not going to do it. We're busy. We've got other things to do. It's not a priority. LA County saw this inaction by the participating city agencies and decided that they were going to use their hammer. And their hammer is basically, we will put together a program to facilitate these for you, because we want to benefit our 12%. We want our 12% benefit, so we'll do it, make it easy for you. And they recognize that some cities, some of the larger cities, may in fact say, no, we'll do it on our own. But the point is, they'll do it, and the city will benefit. So I think your staff should be commended immensely, because they are one of the few in the state who has not said, we're not going to do it, we're too busy. They actually said, we realize it's a lot of work, and we're one of the first out of the chute to do it, but we should do it. because it's the right thing to do. So we're trying to figure out how to get other people motivated to do it. And when you say you have millions of dollars in savings, sometimes it's not enough. So I think LA County is just trying to say either do it through us or do it on your own. We don't really care. Just do it.
Well, Suzanne, do you does the county anticipate bringing this umbrella into all these 25 agencies in Orange County?
I don't know. At this time, no. My understanding is LA County has dedicated 2 full-time staff to this, and we just don't have those resources. So, you know, at this time, I'd say no, but I don't know what the future will bring.
Yeah, I would just say once the template is set, what the county has done is shown other people the step-by-step process to do these deals. So you will have facilitated it just by doing it, because you'll be one of the first to do it. So it'll make it easier for everybody else that comes after. If you decide to do your own program, I know that LA County CAO's office did move 2 people to their public finance department to run this program.
So this, I mean, all of these 25 agencies, other development districts, have the same problem as this deal, and they need to be fixed. And so we can only speculate about how that's all going to work out, as was described.
That's correct. And at this point, you know, that would be an exercise for the future. Republic Finance doesn't know the composition of their debt, the call features, that are available, which entities bonds might be a refunding candidate and which aren't, but we may get there at some point in the future.
Do the supervisors, is your sense that they're aware of the magnitude of this issue?
I believe they are.
Are they? I'm sorry, what'd you say?
We have a limited time with short rates because, you know, at some point rates are going to go back up, so you have a window of opportunity, and then the window is really over if rates go up, which we know at some point they have to.
Correct.
All right. Do we have any more comments before we take action on this? Yes, Ms. Moore? Uh-huh.
On the redevelopment agencies, the idea was to liquidate them that are standing. What we're proposing in the spirit of that, I'm a little concerned that we've got pockets of money here and you've got 25 of these agencies. Maybe 25 years of money that we're sitting on.
Well, I think pursuing debt service savings is in the spirit of reallocating the savings to those entities that would have otherwise received the property tax in the first place.
Correct. But my question was back to the offset that, you know, we don't know what the state's going to do. That would be a bigger savings than the point or so that we're
correct
trying to save. So is it your opinion that we are in compliance with the spirit of the law?
It is. You know, each ROP cycle, there is a clear wind down. You know, there is still some disagreements to be resolved. And I don't know where, you know, all the other 24 agencies stand at this point. But I think in our county, there's a recognition at this point that redevelopment is dissolved.
Okay, any other comments?
Nope. I have just a couple. If I understand it correctly, we can refinance these, but we can't pay them off.
That's correct.
Okay. And as I understand it, this refinancing will save us a considerable amount of money.
Correct.
So wouldn't it make sense for us to hire somebody or even retain a consultant to review the other 24?
Perhaps at some point, but I think our strategy is to take care of the county's refunding and savings first and see how the process goes. As I mentioned, we may get there at some point, but at this point our staff resources are don't allow us. We could hire somebody, but we're living the law only allows for a very stringent administrative cap, and that type of consultant, you know, we'd have to get the Department of Finance approval. And many items so far that have been considered a project cost have come back as a determination from the Department of Finance's administration.
What's your estimate that this is going to save us, this particular one?
This particular one, the most recent estimate was $2.5 million.
That's
12%.
That's still a pretty lofty amount of money. I don't know. Maybe the supervisors ought to be made aware of this, and they can send a directive down to. That's just my thoughts on it.
Sure. I think that is something that we will continue to evaluate and consider.
How many of these 25 or so that you mentioned that are out there, how many of them are the purview of the county as opposed to the local cities?
None of the other 24 are the purview of the county.
Okay, so this is our only county deal we have. So we really can't tell the cities what to do except help them out if they ask.
That's correct. We can only recommend and I guess facilitate as LA County did.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Okay. I misunderstood.
Okay. Do we have any other comments anybody would like to make? We have been asked here today to approve the concept of refunding for these Santa Ana Heights tax allocation bonds. And you were also asking us to approve, aren't you, the council? No, you aren't. Just in concept. Am I right about that,
Susan? In concept and the selection of the finance team.
And the finance team.
I'll second.
Okay. We have a motion. We have a second, please.
I'll second.
Mr. Croner, all in favor?
Aye.
Nobody opposed? And do we have any comments from the public that would like to bring something up or argue with us? If not, this meeting is adjourned.
You'd come up and agree with us.